This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Hey guys, Michael here. We are almost done with this. I swear, we just need to hit our goal, and we thank everyone who has supported us so far. If you haven't yet, check out our book, Plan Twice, Build Once. We feature some of the amazing entrepreneurs we talked to this year. I'm talking Heaton Shaw, Brad Flora, Gabriel Weinberg, Leslie Bradshaw, Ali Gardner, and so many more. We've taken all of the best insights and those tidbits that you listen for. We put them together in a beautiful bound hardcover book. This is something you flip through, you get inspiration, you keep it on your coffee table. We are so proud of what we've put together here, and we're so excited to get it into your hand. So go to rocketship.fm/2015. That's rocketship.fm/2015 and order the book today. It's just $50. You help us support this program and help us to bring you this program next year. We are so close and we thank you. All right. So enough of this. Let's get on to the show. We've got a fantastic one today.
Rocketship Podcast. I'm Matt Goldman.
I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Today we had Samuel Hulick back on the podcast. You might remember him from one of our earlier episodes, and he's been working really hard for the past couple months on useronboard.com. Guys, what do you think of what he's accomplished in the last few months?
I think it's super impressive. He tells us a bit about what he originally set out to do, and part of that was building up an audience and becoming the real voice on user onboarding, and I think that he's progressing nicely along that. What stood out to you, Michael?
I liked his forward thinking.
He's got a 3-year plan. He's in this for the long haul, which I think is nice thinking today, where most of the time we're trying to figure out how to get out as soon as possible. He's trying to figure out, how do I get in 3 years? And so I was really impressed with how committed he is to this. And, you know, I'm excited to see what happens to him in the future. I know we'll probably have him on another 2 or 3 times.
Yeah,
because he's going to keep coming back. So I'm excited for him. He's one of the people I genuinely root for. So let's get into it.
Before we get started, I'd like to thank CodeShip. CodeShip makes continuous delivery simple and easy. For those of you just getting started, CodeShip has a generous free plan with 5 private projects included and 100 builds per month. Not enough? You get 20% off 3 months just for being a Rocketship listener. Plus, the team over at CodeShip spent the past few months talking to customers and just launched a complete redesign of their app with better usability. Go to codeship.com/rocketship to sign up today.
Customer.io is a modern email platform built for startups. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert.
We'd also like to thank Envision App. Envision is by far the best prototyping and collaboration tool on the market. I can personally say I can't imagine delivering another design comp without it. Go to envisionapp.com/rocketship and sign up to get their starter plan free for 90 days.
Before you were on, you were writing the book. So you've launched that a couple months ago. Catch us up on how that launch went.
Well, the launch, I took my lumps. I made a couple rookie mistakes with the launch, but fortunately, it happened. So the book is out there, and the long-term sales outlook has been very strong.
And nice. Did you see a spike in the beginning that's since leveled out, or are you able to drive, you know, a frequent stream of purchases through there?
Well, I guess one of a very narrow silver lining on messing up your launch is that I had extra motivation to really make the long term, the flat line as high as I could. So fortunately, of course, on the launch day, you know, there was a huge spike in sales, and then things kind of mellowed out at a certain range. And over time, I've been able to increase the amount of sales that are in that mellow flat line. So that's been pretty cool to see, and just tracking optimizations to the sales page and things like that has been pretty cool.
So what other side effects have you seen from the book launch besides just revenue from selling it? Has it resulted in other consulting arrangements or product ideas or things like that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would say just, you know, being overall perceived as an authority. So it's definitely been helpful as far as just, you know, cementing my reputation and increasing the likelihood that someone would perceive me as an authority on the topic. And it's also been able to open up opportunities for me to, I guess, for lack of a better term, be generous in certain ways. So being able to use it as a gift to someone, or, you know, offering people discount codes or things like that. It's a very nice asset to have, just as, you know, being a part of a thing and, you know, letting that be something that I can continue selling and continuing to give to people and provide and things like that.
Yeah, it seems like the perfect piece that fits in between the free onboarding sessions that you're doing, the paid sessions, the speaking. It just seems like it fits perfectly into what you're building, which is really making yourself into the user onboarding guy.
That was my ambition at the onset, for sure.
So has that played out the way you'd expect time-wise?
Yeah, my goal basically was, you know, I kind of had 3 phases that I thought would map out to 3 years. Year 1 would be get the book out and just be, you know, go for the authority on that particular topic, or be recognized as the authority on that topic. Year 2 would be just do a ton of consulting work. And then year 3 would be create software that could replace me as a consultant. So I am... Right now, we're almost at the end of the first year. The site was launched mid-November 2013, so we're almost at a 1-year anniversary for that. And then the book was launched at the end of March. So depending on what you count as the birthday, we're getting close to that coming along.
Very methodical. I like the approach that you took, because we started off, we didn't really have a distinct plan or anything specific that we were shooting for. So I feel like we always come in short of what we would like. But then sometimes you look back and realize what you've accomplished in a year, year and a half, 2 years, and it's nice. But by not having a destination, I feel like a lot of times we just feel a bit underwhelmed.
Well, I feel that way about myself all the time too. So even if you do have a plan, I think it's easy to start feeling that way.
Yeah. But I think the reality is that all this stuff takes time, and a year was probably the right estimation for that first goal that you had. And that's not bad in the grand scheme of things for the work that you put in and the way that it's setting you up to launch software or consulting in the future. I feel like it was the perfect decision to take the time up front and put in FaceTime, for lack of a better word, and build up this audience.
Yeah. I mean, it's been obviously it's been really cool to just see how many people have gotten a lot out of it. And, getting emails where people say, I just spent, 6 hours on a Saturday going through all your teardowns, and I have this gigantic list of changes I'm going to be making in my product because of it, has been, super, super cool. So especially, making it easier to get consulting work just by people writing in and saying, I'd like what you're doing. Can you do that for us? Or working on software where I have a pretty easy access to a pretty robust set of beta users and things like that. It's going audience first has made a lot of sense in that regard.
You mentioned that there were some hard lessons you learned when you launched the book. What are some things that you didn't anticipate that in retrospect you would do differently now?
Sure. So the most painful one for sure was spending all of my time writing the book leading up to the launch. I did a lot of things like, sending out advanced copies to people, and I was pretty strategic as far as all that went. But the biggest area of oversight by far was not spending a lot of time on the sales page for the book itself, especially because I was doing like tiered pricing. People didn't really understand like what kind of packages they were getting. I didn't really know how to describe it in ways that would really resonate with people. There was just a lot that I did really wrong there. And weirdly, talking about onboarding and increasing the likelihood that people will switch to your product and pay for your product, was a lot of it was very hypocritical on my part as well. So that being a hypocrite cost me thousands of dollars, I'm sure.
So since then, what are some of the things that you've done to bump up the flat line, so to speak?
Sure. So just continuing to craft that message, picked up a trick from Joanna Weeb at Copy Hackers of just basically using your audience's words to communicate to them. So a lot of that, running surveys and just trying to get an idea of where the pain points for onboarding are, and then just describing, the book in those terms has largely accounted for the success. And also just being really explicit about what people are getting. Like I was describing the different tiers or packages in kind of vague terms, and just, really just laying it out there made a lot of sense, a lot more sense to people.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
What's an example of how you changed your messaging because you were listening to your audience?
I'm trying to think of a single one that would be a great example. Okay, so I can tell you a message that was wrong, which was I had this sort of like intermediate package called the Time Saver package that included the audiobook. And I thought people like I could say, hey, you know, you're busy working. You can listen to the book while working instead of reading it. Think about what your hourly rate is and, you know, you can double it because you'll be doubly productive or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a very shaky sales message. People just didn't, I don't think they really cared that much about the audiobook. And as soon as their, you know, inner calculator came out and started thinking about like, well, what is my hourly rate or like what, how much is my time worth? I don't know. It was just very much not aligned with what their actual frustration that they were experiencing with onboarding was. So that was an example of one that I realized wasn't working. And then I just trimmed it out. I just got rid of that entire package and just was basically, you can get the complete package or you can just get the book. Those were the two things people were really most interested in.
Did people ever equate reading the book with literally making more money for themselves?
Before buying it or after?
Either way.
Before buying it, that was definitely part of the pitch that I was making. So I hope that's the case. And I definitely know afterward, people like Nick Francis from Help Scout, who I think was on this podcast at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's, you know, he provided a very strong testimonial and said, you know, that the book was super influential on their onboarding. And, you know, they've equated that out to hundreds of thousands of dollars in increased revenue. So a lot of case studies like that.
Nice. That's great.
So you've been getting into the speaking gigs lately. What are some of the topics that you're really covering and messages you're driving home about onboarding and the benefits at these conferences that you're going to?
Sure. So the two major topics that I typically cover are design patterns that I'm seeing. A lot of times people really want to know what are the pros and cons of using a wizard to introduce your product instead of a tooltip tour or an intro video or whatever those might be. So just going through, you know, these are the different patterns that you follow. These are times that it's better to use this one versus that one, things like that. But the other topic that I really cover, which is a lot more near and dear to my heart, is how do you even set up a framework for evaluating your product and communicating the essence of it before you even start talking about which kind of pattern should I follow in delivering that message? So, you know, onboarding asks you a really tough question, which is how do you distill your core product down to something that you can reliably and speedily introduce people to. And a lot of times people get stuck on even coming up with what the core of their product even is. Giving people a framework for evaluating their product, the job to be done that's kind of underlying it, has been really, really great as well.
So what's maybe one of the most common mistakes you see people making in onboarding? Does it come down to just lack of communication or language, communicating things wrong, or is it ignoring things that seem obvious to someone who created a product but not necessarily their users?
I would say think of onboarding in terms of like that it's something that you have or don't have, and I think that a lot of times people equate progress or good onboarding with having lots of introduction or having like a really slick layer of onboarding on top of their interface. And I think that that's not the right way to go down that road. I would say that typically if you're looking at onboarding as a thing of dragging people through your product or educating people about your interface, those are things that don't necessarily bring a lot of value to people. I would focus a lot more on how can we get people to actually accomplish something in a reasonable time frame, you know, as quickly as, or not as quickly as possible, as reliably as possible, and focusing a lot more on what are people accomplishing in your product as opposed to how many, you know, features have they understood, if that makes sense.
So like getting to that wow moment as fast as possible.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times people talk about, I just ran a survey asking people what their biggest pain point in onboarding was. And an alarming amount of people said that people are signing up for a product that they don't know what it does, and or, you know, things like that. And, you know, a lot of times people think of onboarding as if we can get people in and clicking around, it'll lead to that aha moment or things like that, where, you know, I think that that's really just a communication issue. And you really want people to be signing up for your product knowing exactly what they're going to be getting. And then onboarding is just helping them get it, as opposed to, well, shoot, get it is kind of vague in that you don't want onboarding to help people understand your product. You want help onboarding to help people do something in your product, if that distinction makes sense.
So are you moving farther up the chain?
How do you mean?
Like, when people ask you that, that's really like a landing page issue. That's a communication issue. That's a marketing issue. Are you getting into more and more of those issues, or is that just kind of a pain point that people are telling you about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that if people are signing up for something and they either don't know what it is, or even worse, think it does something that your product doesn't do, onboarding can't really save that. And so looking at onboarding as a challenge of how do we get people from 0 to 60 implies that, you know, they need to know what they're doing and be making meaningful actions. So it's kind of a, you know, I can't really help people if the problem is happening early in that experience and going sideways from there. So I see it kind of as being, you know, a holistic thing. I don't see it necessarily as explicitly being marketing, but I guess to your point, that's it's certainly if the issue is at communication, then the rest is really not something that you want to optimize.
Right.
What are some examples of the best onboarding you've seen lately? Like, who's really nailing it?
The top three that always come to mind for me, as far as just the teardowns that I've done, the products of the teardowns that I've done, are Basecamp and Slack and Shopify. And then all three of those are for different reasons. And I'm happy to get into those if you want.
Yeah, please.
So Basecamp does a really, really good job of using the default interface to explain itself and get people doing things. A lot of times I think people think of onboarding as like a layer on top of your interface or a series of welcome screens, things like that. And especially on mobile, you'll see there'll be like these, you know, people put a ton of time into these intro cards and people just go swipe, because they just want to actually get to doing the thing that the product lets them do. And if you dismiss all of the intro material and then get to like your, you know, the first screen where you'd be doing something and you don't really know what you're supposed to do on that screen because it was all in all the intro material that you skipped, then that's a really huge issue. I'm a really big fan of saying, all right, let's assume that whatever we layer on top of this is going to be skipped. And let's make sure that the default states are really making sense to people. And then if we add more stuff on that's optional, then that's great. And it can even be more helpful, but it can't fall down on its own if people are dismissing that. So Basecamp, I think, does a really good job of that. And I definitely touch on that in the teardown for it. Slack does a great job of being really personable and human. They have like their Slack bot introduce itself and say, you know, I understand, I'm kind of dumb, but I understand things like yep and nope and things like that. It feels very, I guess, folksy, for lack of a better term, but people really, really love it because I think it engages them emotionally and they feel like they're, you know, interacting with a person and not just fighting against a machine. So that seems to work really, really well for them. And then Shopify is a onboarding process that just looks like they've spent a lot of time attending to all of the nooks and crannies, all the detail work, and just if somebody might be concerned about a particular thing, that concern is addressed right in the right time and the right place. All of the, I guess what you might call UX finish work seems to be really good there.
So when you're consulting with people, where do you start when you start to analyze the user onboarding? Are there some basic metrics that you're looking for?
Yeah. So one of the things that I really recommend doing is looking at the difference between all signups and the signups that become successful and whatever, you know, if you charge for your product, the people who wind up paying for it, convert from trial to paid or whatever that might be. If you don't charge for your product, it's a little trickier, but there are a lot of times companies will have like engagement proxies where if you follow 30 people on Twitter, there's a good chance that you're just going to keep coming back and it'll be a habitual use as opposed to you just kind of flaking off or whatever. So whatever that point of like things are going well, calling it like, say, user success point, separating mm-hmm. people who reach that versus who just sign up in general, and looking at what were the actual steps that they took to get to that successful state, and how can you reliably get people to go through those particular steps. So just reverse engineering, kind of like a recipe for what turns someone into a customer or a successful user, is something that I really recommend. And that can literally just be going through, you know, server logs and just seeing, okay, they signed up and then 5 minutes later they did X, and then 2 days later they did Y, things like that.
It sounds like lead scoring. Is it the same concept?
My interpretation of lead scoring is that you're looking at like the metadata around the person. So, you know, they work at a company that has this many employees and they live in this neighborhood that's for, you know, affluent people or whatever. This would be a lot more around what are the things that they have actually done inside the application and how can we encourage more people to do that?
So what's the bare minimum setup of something like KissMetrics or Mixpanel that you think that every product should have just to understand the actions that people are taking?
I'm not sure I'll have a really good answer for that one. I think it really depends on, you know, one product to another. Typically, I guess you could look at mapping it to things like Dave McClure's pirate metrics, you know, like the AARRR. So just what are the key events that are driving people to switch from one level of your conversion funnel to another. But personally, I really like to take every opportunity to define things in terms of the user's perspective and not the company's perspective. So no user would ever say like, yeah, I'm in the activation stage of my relationship with Netflix right now, or things like that. And so I really look at what does progress look like in your user's life, and how can you define the quote unquote conversion funnel around what progress looks like for them as opposed to what progress looks like for you.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's cool, like, kind of bringing it back to the topic of the book, or like I was mentioning very vaguely earlier, like opportunities to be generous and things like that. Like, that was definitely one of them. And also looking at, once again, the underlying job to be done, or getting people from screw up to winner. You know, the book is like, I guess you could kind of think of that as like the stage one of that. Signing up for the software would be something, you know, even further down the line, or having me, you know, come in and consult or do a workshop or whatever that might be. So I kind of look at it as like, you know, the very first thing you might experience are the teardowns and get some value from that. Then you could level up to the book, and then you could level up to software or level up to consulting, things like that. But it's kind of that's my own sort of steps to transition people from frustration to success in the vector that I help people with.
Yeah, it all really looks like one long onboarding process for the software.
Yeah, you could say that for sure.
Yeah, because anyone that's using onboarding software who knows more about onboarding from your training is going to probably be more successful with the product.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times I'll hear a big source of frustration is, you know, people are getting really, are recognizing that onboarding is a big problem, which maybe they weren't recognizing before going through the teardowns or reading the book. And then they're having trouble just getting their organization to adopt it or take on that kind of mindset, or even just allocate the resources they need to make substantial changes. So that's a really big thing for me from a software standpoint is like, okay, if I can basically provide something that's pretty plug and play, then so long as people recognize the need, they should be able to, you know, get an engineer to work on something to set it up for, you know, a couple hours, as opposed to trying to get a whole team to work on something for a couple months.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Can you let everyone know, in case they missed it in the last episode, where they can keep up with you online?
Absolutely. It's useronboard.com. It's like user onboarding, but that one was taken already. So useronboard.com and then @useronboard on Twitter.
Cool. Thanks, Sammy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our newsletter, where twice monthly we send out actionable advice for entrepreneurs and exclusive links to AMAs with our guests. That's rocketship.fm. Sign up today.
me breath, let me fall. Break me back, let my thoughts. I've come back to the land of love. The times are done, I'm looking back to town. Sometimes I feel like they don't understand me. I hear their mouths making foreign sounds. Sometimes I think they're all just speaking tongues.